You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Paul Eales.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Bernd Wiesberger claims a second Rolex Series title and a third European Tour win of the season with victory at the Italian Open.
You know, it's just a lovely feeling to be standing here now with three trophies this year. It's surreal. We really try and push ourselves for the last 4 weeks at the end of the year and hopefully get a chance at the Race to Dubai title as well come the last round.
We'll hear more from Bernd Wiesberger later in the show as we review all the action from Rome, and we'll also preview the next event on the European Tour, the Amundi Open de France. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined today by Paul Eales, who, as we keep saying, but I never, funnily enough, get bored of saying it, he's won in all three disciplines on the European Tour, Paul. That puts you in a very small category.
Yes, it does. I don't get bored of hearing it either, Rob. Thank you.
And keen amateur golfer and commentator, of course, Richard Kaufman. Richard, how are you?
Who's never even won the monthly medal, yes. Hello.
No, but you keep entering, don't you?
Yes. got to try, haven't you?
Do you, are there people that will play with you at the golf club, or do you have to sort of go out on a one ball?
Now and again, someone would join me, but yeah, normally one. I find I play a lot better on my own.
Italian Open Rolex Series event, it's become a very big event now in the European Tour, Paul.
Yes, it's a huge event now. You could see the field there, and of course, the crowds in Rome were fantastic. So, and we had a great winner.
Yeah, Bernd Wiesberger, second Rolex Series title of the season. I mean, when I hear that, Richard, automatically I think of pound notes, or dollars to be precise.
Yeah, ka-ching. Listen, when you put your feet up for 8 months and haven't earned a euro, as Bernd did last year, I'm sure it's very welcome. But I think he's got to the point now where financially things are sort of on the back burner, really. I'm sure the money means something, but, you know, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, whatever you're, you know.
It's not everything, but it's right out there with oxygen.
No, but when does it become, you know, something that is not the forefront of your mind?
I think the interesting thing from Bernd, he's played 26 tournaments this calendar year, yeah. And I don't see him playing that amount going forward.
Well, no,
for the next few years.
He played a lot of events, Paul, at the start of the year, or this season, if you like, because he was trying to find a rhythm to his game.
I understand that.
And he played events that won't be on the schedule next year because suddenly now he's top 25 in the world and he'll be playing.
Well, let's see what decisions he makes, because he will have decisions to make, and his rapid rise up the rankings, up the world rankings, with the money going into his bank account, has come from playing in the European Tour. Let's see what happens when he decides he wants to be a world player, because that's always an issue.
Yeah, but he's done it before, hasn't he? He's been in the top 50.
He's played plenty of majors, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, his resume there with the big boys is quite good. But I just think from a European standpoint, I think he'll be travelling more and playing less within the folds.
I think that's
where it, that's what happens.
That's what it is. He did start three shots behind the overnight leader, Matthew Fitzpatrick, who was on a golf course that, Paul, absolutely suited him down to the ground.
Yeah. Not that I'm trying to be different here, but I think Matt Fitzpatrick has got a game that will play on any golf course. I think he's got all the bits and pieces there. There are no weaknesses in his game. Obviously, he doesn't hit it over 300 yards, but...
He's not suited to bog-standard PGA Tour fare, then, is he?
Yeah, but he is, because he's finished second or third in, where was it, Bay Hill, did he finish? Which is like 90 miles long and, you know, thick rough and... carries over water. So Matt can play anywhere. Don't underestimate, and I don't think anybody is doing, the qualities of this young man's game. And when you can putt like he can putt, boy, he's got a chance. But I understand what you're saying. It was a narrow course. You had to think your way around. He's got Billy Foster on the bag as Matt, so there's a huge
help.
Huge help for him.
His experience for fantastic. Many, many years caddying for top players will certainly help Matthew Fitzpatrick. And keep Matthew light and fluffy, who sometimes looks to be quite intense on the golf course. I think Billy's probably the antidote to that.
Yeah, Matt's very level. When I worked with the England squad, Matt was there playing as a junior golfer and everything was in the right place. His parents were absolutely right behind him. He had an inner steel even then as a 15, 16-year-old that he knew where he was going. He was on a path for stardom. And what, at the age of 23, has he won four times on the...
He's 25 now and he's won...
But
by the age of 23, yeah.
He'd won four times, hadn't he, on the...
Yeah, his last win was 11 months ago, so he's got five wins now.
I know.
So
and he's 25.
Yeah. But what do we think? I mean, Germany, Sweden, now here, Matt Fitzpatrick, winning positions, unable to get it quite across the line. Was that five runner-up finishes in the last year?
What do you think, Richard? Yeah. You're posing the question.
Well, I'm not posing the question. Yeah. You guys...
Well, you've got your own thoughts. Answer the question.
For me personally, it's about putting yourself in a winning position, and I think he's doing that, and eventually something will happen where he'll get over the line. I thought Wiesberger yesterday went out and won it. I know Matt made that double bogey at nine, poor tee shot, obviously had to take three off the tee, and you'll look at a mistake like that at a crucial time.
Well, he doubled nine and Wiesberger birdied it.
Yeah.
And that's a massive swing in the direction of the Austrian.
Well, that was the moment where Wiesberger suddenly took control of the
tournament. Wiesberger didn't know where he was until after the 16th, which I find extraordinary.
I know.
He didn't know that Matthew had doubled, so he didn't know that he was in the driving seat coming down the stretch at all. I had no clue. Which I got to say, I don't understand that. You play a monthly medal at your golf club, you hand your card in, you don't know if you won or finished 10th. You just hand it in, that's it.
Well, go on, Paul. I mean, I'm with Robert. I find that strange that you wouldn't want to know where you are.
I think you look at
what
the top players do. Ask Tiger what he does. Ask JT what he does. Ask Justin Rose what he does. Ask them what they do, and they all want to know where they stand.
But it's quite common. Players do this.
It's not common amongst the top players. It is absolutely uncommon amongst the top players.
Paul, would
does
you,
Brooks Koepka want to know where he is?
Paul, would you always? I mean, you're playing now on the European stage tour.
I always look to see who's leading and how many shots behind they are at that particular moment in time. But no, I've always been a scoreboard watcher, and it's great for the ego when you see your name up there. You're right, I'm doing okay here. But I think you were talking about Matt hitting it out of bounds at number nine off the tee. But was it the middle of the front nine of the first or second round where Berndt had three bogeys in four holes? And at that moment in time, I think he'd twisted his ankle or something. He's thinking...
Round one, yeah.
Round one, so am I going to be here? And suddenly he just stuck at it and he's played and it is a marathon and you know, after 72 holes, you add them all up. And, you know, Matt shot 69 yesterday in the lead, two under par with an out of bounds, which would have...
There's nothing wrong with that.
Would have destroyed most people. Yeah. So he'd just been unlucky that, you know, Berndt just played an exceptional round of golf and holed all those putts from mid-range that, you know, if you get one or two in a round, you've done quite well. But he was rolling them all in from 15 feet.
But it's incredible. Fitzpatrick, what's fourth on the Race to Dubai now without a win?
Yeah, well, you've had people make Ryder Cup sides without a win.
Ollie Wilson... is one that comes to mind.
Yeah, people have made Ryder Cup sides without winning. So, you know, consistent finishes does get you a long way. There's no doubt about it. And Matthew Fitzpatrick is a very consistent golfer. That's what he is. Very consistent. You just keep putting yourself in the position, I think I'd try it.
Well, you've got that, you know, I was going to mention it, about Robert McIntyre, you know, and the race for Rookie of the Year with Kurt Kitayama. Kurt's won twice. Robert hasn't won, but Robert's way ahead of him in the
Race to Dubai.
In the rankings.
Miliozzi's won twice as well, yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously, some of the
There's
big events...
I mean, Adrianos has had a really good season as well. So, yeah. You know, it's a very strong
it's
list.
Great,
of,
isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
but
really,
strong,
really, really
I keep
good.
Saying, by the way, I think Arnaus might... Because I think Arnaus is going to win in Dubai.
That's why do you think that?
I keep predicting that because he won... This is my theory.
Eventually, you'll be right.
He won the Alps Tour Grand Final 2 years ago. He won the Challenge Tour Grand Final last year. And now he's put himself into the Grand Final of the European Tour, the DP World Tour Championship.
So for that reason and that reason alone...
He's
a very good player. I like watching him.
I think he's got a good game for that
like
golf course as well. So, yeah, I've been predicting it for a few months.
He's got one element that you need around that golf course, and that is be able to smash it miles, because that is such an advantage around the earth course. There's no doubt about it.
Well, hang on a minute. Didn't Fitz win round there?
Yeah.
Yep.
I rest my case.
It doesn't mean you can't win, but it's a massive advantage if you do hit it a long
every
way.
Week, even on a short
course. That golf course is, because when they put the pins in the greens within greens, and you're going in with a 9-iron, and the rest of the field are hitting a 5-iron in, it makes a massive difference. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but you have an advantage.
Hit your 5-iron to 35 feet, you putt well, you knock it in, and at the end of the week, you win. It's all about the putting.
No, it's not all about the putting.
Oh,
it's not.
For me, it is.
No, it's not.
Well,
no,
yeah, I mean, you go back to what we've just seen in Italy, Wiesberger. I mean, the par saves... Thanks to the putter at, 11 and 12?
Yeah.
I mean, 18?
18 as well. Was really nice up and down. But, was it 12 where he's knocked it in from 20 feet, look dead cert to drop a shot there.
Yeah, usually you'll find that if you're shooting in the mid-60s, you're holing quite a number of putts that are outside 10 feet.
No one wins without holing putts.
Correct.
Nobody wins without holing putts. You have to hole putts to win.
But it's the length of putt, Rob, isn't it? Because you can't keep hitting it to 6 feet all day long and making those.
No, that doesn't happen.
You know, as with Burnt yesterday, there was a number of times, whether it was for par or birdie, rolled one in from 15, 20 feet. Now, percentage-wise, you're probably two-putting from there, but on the day... And that's why he shot 66 and he lifted the trophy.
That's right.
Well, 65, sorry.
Are we sure? 66, 65?
It was 65.
Six under, yeah.
No mistakes on this show. Time to hear from the champion, Bernd Wiesberger, who has now won 3 times in a season, and it just keeps on improving.
I've done really well when I was in position, even though it was felt like a long battle today with Matthew playing really good golf out here and really being a golf coach that suits his game, so... We felt we needed to get to 15, and it was nice to get one more and you just get over the line. But, you know, we've just really embraced the challenge when we were in those positions and embraced just the possibility to be back there. And, you know, it's just a lovely feeling to be standing here now with 3 trophies this year. It's surreal.
You've shot to the top of the Race to Dubai rankings now. Is that one of your goals now for the rest of the season?
I mean, this would be amazing. You know, still a lot of points to be played for, and now, obviously, doing well in the big events in Scotland, in Ireland, and now here obviously helps a lot. But you know, we really try and push ourselves for the last 4 weeks at the end of the year, and hopefully get a chance at that Race to Dubai title as well come the last round.
How big a target do you think for him now, Ryder Cup inclusion in the top nine is?
Huge. I mean, he was asked there about the goal being the Race to Dubai. I'm sure he would love to end the year as Europe's number one, but the main goal surely now for him is to make the Ryder Cup team. He's getting towards his mid-30s. He's been close a few times. And he had the unfortunate experience of having to sit next to me for a little bit of the last Ryder Cup, because he was working there for Austrian Media, came into the commentary box, did a little bit of commentary for us at the Ryder Cup as well. To go from that to not knowing what was going to come next to 2 years later being in the actual team would be huge for him.
Yeah, I think your goals change, don't they, throughout the season, even though you have them probably listed. And I would guess that number one goal would be to win a major for him. Ryder Cup would be mainly second, and then to win the Race to Dubai. But they may have changed now because he's in pole position, isn't he? Can he go ahead and win that? How good would that be on the CV? Yeah, I'm Europe's number one golfer. Then comes a Ryder Cup, and then, of course, 4 chances to win majors again.
Would you rather win the Race to Dubai or make the Ryder Cup side?
Yeah, well, the Ryder Cup is the number one premier golf event, so I would say Ryder Cup.
I would rather win the Race to Dubai all day long. Yeah, absolutely, no. Yeah.
I think the experience that the players talk about now in Ryder Cup sets it above a achievement, which would be...
Sure, I get it. I get how big the Ryder Cup is. I definitely get it, yeah.
And normally winning the Race to Dubai would lead to making the Ryder Cup team as well because of the process. But it'd be interesting to see, as the Ryder Cup race develops, how Wiesberger plays, because I have to hear it from him personally, but I'm pretty sure it's kind of consumed him a little bit in those Ryder Cup years, and maybe rather than, you know...
Only Austrian to play in the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, so rather than just being able to focus on your own game and just letting the process happen, it maybe has consumed him a little bit because he wants it so much. This is a player who we mentioned before the injuries, was regular top 50 of the world 3 or 4 years in a row, so he's got the quality to play in it. And if you look at his wins, they all came in, apart from when he broke through, they all came in years outside of those Ryder Cup years. So he's given himself now, after this win, a fantastic platform.
There's almost pressure on him. There's almost pressure on him now to make the side, because he's been a really good player for a number of years. He's never made the side, and now he's 1 foot on the springboard, ready to take off. He's in a position now where he almost should make the team.
But does the injury, does that kind of give him a perspective that maybe will help him in terms of achieving that?
Well, yeah, things do as you go through life. Your experiences do form how you think. But for me, you know, he's now won 2 Rolex Series events, which are this huge prize money. He's got more to come. I think we'll see over the next month or so, when you've got the next tranche of Rolex Series events, where he is, whether his expectations have gone beyond his form, or as we were mentioning before, just consistently being there weekend in, weekend out.
I mean, if he has a good finish, he can pretty much play his way into the team.
Yeah.
Before we get to the end, the start of December.
But even if he doesn't crack it early on in the season, you know, for him just to have his consistency of performance in the bigger events is going to be great for
him. Goes back to the point you were making before, Robert, in terms of then choosing what his events are going to be for the start of 2020. Does he play?
Well, when you play Ryder Cup, you want to be making sure that you've been a consistent performer throughout the period. You don't want to have a glut of points at the start, be out of form at the end, but you're still in the team. That's the guy you don't want to be. You want to be the guy that keeps playing well all the way up to the match next year. So if he makes a whole stack of money now, it's important for him to keep that form going all the way through until he gets to his first Ryder Cup match.
So would you stay European Tour centred?
No, I think once you become a top 50 player in the world, you are duty bound almost to go and play all the WGCs. You'll play the four majors.
Sure.
And then you're going to play a few events in the States, because even if you don't join the tour, you'll get a couple of invites before one of the majors that you want to play in. So there, now you're playing sort of 10 tournaments that count on the PGA Tour before you've even blinked. So it depends what he wants to do. It's not easy to keep crossing that water.
But it was interesting. I had a conversation with him at the Open Championship. He'd just won in Scotland, obviously, a few days before. And he said, I'm not going to go and play in Memphis for the WGC event, which is the week after the Open Championship. He's, I think, very much clued on to what he wants and how he's going to do it. And he just felt, I don't want to have that transatlantic trip then. I think it's going to knock me out of my rhythm. I'm better off resting, and I think you know.
But that was a WGC straight after a major. It was in a bad spot. You could understand that. But are you saying that's his view to the world coming up in the next 12 months?
No, what I'm saying is, I mean, he could have easily gone out there and taken the cash. It was a no cut field. You know, he was guaranteed X thousands of dollars, but his picture was a little bit bigger than that, and I think he'll be sensible in his planning.
Yeah, I think he'll be sitting down now, if he hasn't done it before, with his manager, Brendan Taylor, and they'll be talking about where do we see ourselves, which is the best road for Bernd to travel, and I think they'll make that decision and stick with it, whatever that will be.
I think it's always a movable feast. I think you can make a decision now that doesn't really stack up in 3 months' time. It depends. I just don't think you can call it now.
No.
He's going to see how the end of this season runs out, where he finishes in the Race to Dubai, where he is in the world rankings, and then they'll look at that. I'm sure he's going to have some downtime before we get to what is going to be a busy start the next year. So we'll see, but very well played, Bernd Wiesberger. And he joins John Rahm, Alex Noren, Justin Rose and Danny Willett as multiple Rolex Series champions. That's also a very nice club to be in.
Yeah, very nice. And what about Austrian golf right now? I was in India last week. Christine Wolf became the first Austrian to win on the Ladies European Tour in a decade. Schwab was, what, fourth here? Sepp Straka was in contention in the PGA Tour. Suddenly the Austrians coming to the fore.
Yeah, well, we played the Stayshore Tour at Moorhof a couple of weeks ago, and that was supported brilliantly by the Austrians in Graz there. It was a great event, and they were so excited about Bernd and Matthias Schwab. And
I mean, they're big stars, aren't they, in Austria now?
Absolutely, and quite right. You know, they're stars on the world stage, aren't they?
I know, but golf doesn't always translate into big stars in respective countries, but I think in Austria they are. They go on these game shows, and they're very much visually there on TV. I mean, because traditionally, Paul, I mean, my own Marcus Breer, but traditionally Austria hasn't had a great history of great players on the European Tour and elsewhere.
No, I mean, it's been small, isn't it? But you could say that about quite a number of the nations that you look at now that are prominent within the Race to Dubai. You know, the amount of different flags, and you thought when Rob and I were playing the tour, it wasn't that way. It was very much British-centric, wasn't it, with a And the Spanish there, and then, of course, the Swedes came to the fore, and now
Team Sweden was a big thing, wasn't it?
Hello
Sweden, that was a big thing. With Jan Blomqvist was the manager, if you like, of the young Swedes coming on tour, and that was the real first infusion of new talent from a new golfing country that we had on the European Tour. But they're all joining in now. It's a very international tour, and like you say, Austria on the up and up with the players that they've got. 22nd in the official world golf rankings. And that is a career high for Bernd Wiesberger. So let's hope that steep trajectory keeps moving in the same direction. For the rest of the leaderboard, let's hear from England's Matt Fitzpatrick, who came very close to winning second once again.
Played great, just one bad tee shot, but you know, you look at it, that could have happened the first day. Just happened to happen on nine today, but just disappointing because the way I played this week was fantastic. So to lose by one is obviously pretty disappointing.
How much does it get to you when you come that close? You know, I mean, you seem a very passionate guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's disappointing. It's my fourth of the year. I've been in the position three of the four times, been in the position with the lead. And yeah, just all the guys have just played better on Sunday. I wouldn't say I've particularly thrown them away. I think I've played well when I've been up there on a Sunday. Just other people really, really keep annoying me and keep coming up from behind. So, look, it is what it is. Obviously, it's still a great week. Just obviously, yeah, here to win and not here to just make up the numbers.
He's trying to become the youngest English player to win six European Tour titles. If he'd have won in Rome, he would have been that. He's still got other chances to claim Lee Westwood's record. It wouldn't surprise me if he does.
No, well, it wouldn't. I mean, here's a guy who won the US Amateur. I mean, we've known about Matt Fitzpatrick a while. Was he World Amateur number one?
World number one, yeah.
You know, and as Paul was saying before, this thing about he doesn't hit it that far. I mean, I've seen him hit tee shots over 300 yards.
Yeah, he averages 290. That's his stats. But yeah. If you look at all his stats, you know, he's right up there in them all. But, of course,
he's not one of those that's going to knock it out there 360, you know, up there with the likes of Rory and, you know, and Rahm. But he can still hit the ball a fair good distance. There's every reason he can go on and win big tournaments.
Does. Look, I'm just saying, if you look at the top 10 in the world and look how far those guys hit the ball, that's all I'm saying.
But he's not short, is he?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, look at the guys in the top 10 and how long they are.
He's not up with them, though.
It is easier if you hit it further. It just is. Yeah. Golf has always been a power game. Go back to Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. It's always been a power game. Go through the top 10 in the world.
It's going to be harder for Fitzy because he doesn't have that power game. But you look at Luke Donald when he became world number one and was number one for a period of time. But that was built around his exceptional skills on
from
and around.
From 30 feet?
Correct.
And Fitzpatrick, his go-to player is Jim Furyk. Jim Furyk's the only guy that shot two sub-60 rounds on the PGA Tour. Jim Furyk, although compromised with distance from the tee, is the fifth all-time money winner on the PGA Tour. Jim Furyk. So that's Matt Fitzpatrick. That's what he can do. Now, the Superman stuff, I'm not sure he can do.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And it's come to the stage now.
You know, the Rorys and the Koepkas and the Dustin Johnsons and all those guys. Justin Rose bombs it. You don't think he does, but he hits it a long way. All these guys in the top 10, they kill it.
Yeah, but there's enough courses in
without a question.
In a year that... You know,
he's going to have a fabulous career.
Oh, there's no question about it. He's got everything.
Can he be a world number one?
Yes, everything that he does is above.
He can be a world number one.
Yeah,
and he can definitely win a major.
Yes, he can, absolutely.
Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Matt Fitzpatrick won.
And everything that
it
Matt
wouldn't surprise me. He could definitely win a major. I can see him winning an Open.
Yeah, it's above average. Every category that Matt has is above average.
And a US Open as well.
And he's, what, 26 years of age?
25, yeah.
Let's hear from Andrew Johnson, who also played very well. Good to see him playing well again. The beef. Everyone loves the beef.
Yeah, really happy. I thought I just stuck at it really well all week. It's one of them strange weeks. Golf's, it's a strange game, you know. You can come off and you can think, like, I'm playing so good, and you end up 40th or miscut or something like that. And it felt quite scrappy at times all week. And I just seemed to keep the ball in play, keep scoring, hit a good shot at the right time. And just keep ticking along. So it's been a really good week.
There's definitely been a turnaround for Beef. There's been a rededication to the game. He is a really good ball striker.
Well, he is, but he changed coach, didn't he? When he'd gone through that lull, he went from Alan Thompson and he's got Hugh Maher now, who's managing more than just a golf swing. This is about performance, where he wants to go. He's analysing to the nth detail. And Andrew looks like he's enjoying this and things are starting to go on the up. And why wouldn't you? Because he's been down there in a dark place.
In a low spot,
he was in a dark place.
Yeah, he was.
And I think the changes for him have been good, and it really is great to see him, although I wish he'd have his beard trimmed or... looked after a little bit better. It looks a bit...
The sticky. Unkempt look. You're not into that, are you?
No.
See, I see you're very clean shaven this morning, which is a shame for the people listening to this podcast because they can't they can't see how close you actually get to your skin. It's not an electric shaver that I wouldn't have thought.
No. Well, it's...
Wet shave?
Yeah.
Cutthroat?
Yeah. No. Just safety razor.
Have you got... You know, would you describe yourself as a man that has sensitive skin or... what? I'm not sure.
Well,
look very well moisturised.
He's the best a man can get.
He looks very moisturised. I'm paid by other people. Before we get into the top 10, worth mentioning that Thomas Peters flew round in under 2 hours.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
And he said it wasn't a marathon.
Well, and he shot level par. He had a triple bogey and three birdies, I think he had. The rest were pars, and just goes to show, as we keep saying, when we had the shot clock masters, if the guys play quicker, they're going to shoot lower.
You've done a round like that, haven't you, Robert?
Myself and Mark Rowe, we weren't doing particularly well because we were third off on the Sunday. And the guys in front kind of knew that we were going to try and play a quick round. 2 hours, 2 minutes around Stuttgart. And Stuttgart isn't green 5 yards next tee. There's a thrombosis hill, which is, I think it's the walk from the third green up to the fourth tee. The caddies, when we finally ran up this hill and got to the tee box, were in bits. And I had the Barnsley brain caddying for me. And he was leaving a towel, another ball, the club that he thought it was, and he would go on to the next position.
This hill was so steep that they used to have, when a caddy didn't get a job that 1 week, he would stand there and the guys would pay him to carry their bag up the hill.
You played that course.
Yeah.
But if you're third last group,
third from the first group out.
Yeah, so you must have gone through the other two, I take it. Yeah.
Yeah, they just got out of the way. We didn't even ask. We just hit and went and gone. They knew we were coming. They just got... We might as well have been first off.
And what did you score?
We were between us, I think we were 6 or 7 under par. Well, we're both under par. Rowe was better than me. In fact, we would have broken 2 hours apart from Mark walked 50 yards up to the green and back again because he was like 3 or 4 under. And he thought, oh, I'm doing quite well here. I said, Rowe, you're ruining this. Yeah. Anyway, 2 hours, 2 minutes... And both under par. I think put those two things together. Because a lot of people have done quick rounds and they shot 78, 79. Well, that's not really part of the deal, is it?
No.
How about Robert McIntyre's performance last week?
Terrific for three rounds.
Yeah.
He is I really like watching Robert McIntyre. I got a lot of time for him. I think he's going to be a top, top player. Love watching him.
What about the driver off the deck? Which he's done.
He's a ball striker. Oh.
Yeah. He was a... Is it a shinty? What is it they play?
Yeah, he plays shinty.
Shinty,
yeah.
So hand-eye coordination, hitting a moving ball. Fantastic. I just think that the way he's progressed from the amateur ranks where he beat Cameron Champ in Walker Cup 6-4, as I think, so battered him. Top 15 of the Challenge Tour, and now he's in the top 10 of the Race to Dubai. I mean, just an absolutely amazing transition all the way through.
I think he's going to be... Well, he is the top Scot now.
And he plays left-handed, so, I mean, right-handed's hard enough.
Goodness me. No, Robert McIntyre, brilliant player. Really looking forward to watching his career. It's already been a lot of fun this year so far.
And you never...
Another question?
No, but I'm saying, just about McIntyre, you never know, Ryder Cup year, the way he's progressing, he could become one of those players you wouldn't expect to make the team, but he could. He's got the game.
I think he's got a great chance of making the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah.
I absolutely have him down as a runner and rider to make the team. Not even in the surprise box. I think he's in the got-every-chance box of making the team. OK, Paul, give us the top 10 from the Italian Open.
Tied in 10th was Wang Pavan, Van Rooyen, Sabatini and Justin Walters. Tied 7th, Matt Wallace, Francesco Laporta and Shubhankar Sharma. Tied 4th, Robert McIntyre, Andrew Johnston, Matthias Schwab. 3rd on his own was Kurt Kitayama. 2nd, Matthew Fitzpatrick. And our winner was Bernd Wiesberger.
You know you've got a microphone, don't you? You don't have to shout. You know that. You're aware of that.
I was just getting excited.
Last week's predictions, talking about excitement. Oh, this is getting close. And it's all self-inflicted. The format is you get two picks, one from outside last year's Race to Dubai Top 50 and any person that you think might win. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, and -5 if you miss the cut. Jamie Spence went for Matt Wallace, who got 5 points for finishing 7th. Justin Harding was 57th, 0 points. So 5 for Jamie Spence in the co-presenter's chair where Paul is this week. In Rich's chair, Peter Finch went for Francesco Molinari in Italy, champion golfer and all that. -5 points, MC miscut. And Bob McIntyre, You've got 10 points for finishing fourth, 5 points to the good. I went for Paul Casey, a banker, to finish in the top 10.
Wasn't even close to making the cut.
Wasn't even close. He missed the cut. And Christian Bezuidenhout withdrew because he's got a wrist injury. That's not what I wanted to hear.
So you had a great week.
So minus five for me. It all means that I'm dragging the presenters down to 175 points, co-presenters up to 150, and the guests are up to 130. So that's all to play for. Mm. All to play for. Fantasy race to Dubai game. Lee Finlay is still the global leader. David Moran got the most points from the Italian Open with the top three all in his team of six. And Wiesberger as captain. That's impressive.
Wow.
And if you want to get involved, you can by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Richard, top 10 in the race to Dubai, please.
Yeah, despite that injury, Christian Bezuidenhout is at 10. Danny Willett at 9. Van Rooyen is at 8. The aforementioned Robert McIntyre up to 7 now. Tommy Fleetwood at 6. Matt Wallace at 5. Matt Fitzpatrick up a couple of places to number 4. Shane Lowry at 3. John Rahm at 2. And as we've been saying, at number 1 again is Bernd Wiesberger.
Now, in other news, Emilio Quartero Blanco. I mean, he must be a Formula One racing driver with a name like that. Emilio Quartero Blanco secured an emotional maiden win on the European Challenge Tour after defeating Oscar Langdon on the third playoff hole of the Stone Irish Challenge. Final round of the tournament, which was being played at Headford Golf Club, was cancelled as heavy rains waterlogged the course, rendering it unplayable. So the joint 54-hole leaders, Quartero Blanco and Langdon, faced off in a playoff held on the par 3 17th hole. I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
What? Do
final round gets cancelled.
Yeah, I've heard of it before.
And a playoff from the previous situation on the day before.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where? I can't give you a specific, but it definitely. No, there is definitely a precedent for
didn't
that.
We have something at.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah, well, Celtic Manor, there was a playoff that was on a par three, but that might
That was a par three playoff, but I think that was on the day.
Oh, right.
I think Paul McGinley was in it, Paul Laurie was in it.
Yeah.
And maybe Darren Lee was in it.
Yeah, good call. Good call. But was that after four rounds then, or was
I think it was a rain-affected event, but I think the playoff was on a tie at a shortened tournament, but they had played that day.
Right.
I don't think they'd come out the next day
we did
and
it.
Played off
I'll
like
tell you
that.
Where we did it. We did it in the Italian Senior Open with Chucky Fowler and somebody else, where they just played the 18th as a par three because it was the only hole that wasn't submerged underwater.
The next day?
On the Sunday, yeah.
So no golf on the Sunday.
No golf on the Sunday.
And they decided it that way?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
That's a new one on me. But
for that guy, I mean, he was losing his Challenge Tour status, and now suddenly... Yeah. He's got a
you
chance.
Can't, he gets a guaranteed spot on the Challenge Tour with a name like Emilio Quartero Blanco.
Clark Dennis was the...
Well trailed out.
Whoa,
and you didn't even look at your phone there. Well done.
What phone?
Lanto Griffin, by the way, yes. Who's also had his tale of woe to this point. He's in his 30s now. Makes the big breakthrough on the PGA Tour at the Houston Open, which used to be the week before the Masters. That's when Poulter won it in 2018 and 2019, Lanto Griffin in the fall. But the start of the new season is now the third first-time winner out of the first five wins this season. So, yeah, maiden PGA Tour victory at the Houston Open, and he won it up the last, making a brilliant par. Now, he hit a drive up the last, water all the way down the left, pushed it, understandably, into the rough. He had 194, and I can only describe the 9-iron that he hit from 194 on the last green as a chip-out. It looked like he was just nudging it forward because he didn't want to take on the green, and it pitched in the middle of the green. 194, 9-iron, and he hardly took a swipe at it.
Out of the rough?
Out of the rough.
Yeah, no, I saw it.
And he two-putted from... He had to hold a five-footer back after his first putt for the win. It was really good.
Is he the first Lanto to win on the PGA Tour?
I don't know. I don't know. It's not a name I'm familiar with.
He's named after some hippie...
This is all your stuff now, Richard.
No, he's named after some hippie god or something. His parents were hippies. He said he had a great upbringing. Unfortunately, his dad passed away when he was a young kid. But, I've never heard of the name Lanto personally before, but I think we'll be hearing a lot more from him.
Great win. You know, he got to the point where he was almost going to pack his career in. That's how low he got. And now he's $1.35 million richer and gets an invite to the Masters, gets to go at the Players, gets to go to the Tournament of Champions. He's got a two-year exemption. Life is good for the Griffins. Mark Hubbard and Scott Harrington just missed out and both played really well coming down the stretch as well. But it was a very impressive win, and it's good to see guys that have really had it the hard way come through in the end. Normally, when you first hear of people, they're going to be in their early 20s. this is a guy in his 30s. Mm. It's good that golf can work the other way around as well. We're so obsessed with youth and youngsters and college kids that you see a guy who's 30, 31 break through for the first time. It's really heartwarming. Top 10 in the world, please, Paul.
In 10th place is Xander Schauffele. 9th is Tiger Woods. 8th, Bryson DeChambeau. Down to 7th is Justin Rose. 6th is Patrick Cantlay. Up to 5th is Justin Thomas. 4th, John Rahm. 3rd, Dustin Johnson. 2nd is Rory McIlroy. And number 1 in the world is Brooks Koepka.
So I know it's very early doors, but there are 9 people in the 9 berths right now, Rich, to make the next Ryder Cup side. It will chop and change, of course, with a long way to go until the BMW PGA Championship, which is the last counting event next year, next fall, or next autumn. How dare I say fall? So who are the 9?
Okay, the 9 who would make the team as it stands right now. From the world points list, it's Danny Willett, Bernd Wiesberger, John Rahm and Victor Perez. And from the points list, it's Matt Fitzpatrick, the other Matt Southgate, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Paul Waring and Joachim Lagergren.
If Padraig Harrington had that as his 9, would he be happy?
Well, I don't think he would have a choice. I'm sure he would be happy, but then what he would do, he would have to add 3 to those.
He's got
which
3
would
picks.
Give him, yeah, would give him a choice, but I think that would be a hell of a team.
It'd be a good team, but it's not the team he wants, and it's not the team he'll get.
No, there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of changes. That won't be the 9 come the day, but what the great thing is for those players that are in that top 9, it's there for them. If they can try and stay in that 9, there's no reason why they can't qualify.
No, but the question was, if it was today, that would be the team. And, you know, the US team today would look very different, or will look very different come that time. But I could see those guys playing. I mean, there's a bit of Ryder Cup.
Listen, I'm not saying they're not good players. They've all played very well, obviously, over the last month to put themselves where they are right now. But come on, I mean, the chances of Lagergren, Perez and Waring being in the Ryder Cup team, you'd say are pretty minimal.
You heard it here first.
You heard it
Matt
here.
Southgate, maybe you'd put stick in there as well. I mean, it's minimal. It's a minimal chance. Up against, you know, players like, because we haven't mentioned Rory McIlroy, for example.
Justin Rose, seven over par on Saturday, 7 under par on Sunday. Yeah. What about that?
I know, excellent. What a swing. 14 shots.
I think they may get a pick if they're not in.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's concentrate, turn our minds to the next event. We're doing the Capital City Tour on the European Tour. We've been in London recently, Madrid recently. Last week we were in Rome. This week we are in Paris. It's a very romantic tour, Paul, isn't it?
It is, and my favourite golf course on tour.
Le Golf National.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, played rubbish every time I went there, but just love the experience of hitting balls in lakes and three-putting my way around. But I having seen the Ryder Cup there, it was the perfect venue. I love everything about it. The weekends in Paris are just something else, where the glitterati come out to watch and...
Not just quite in the old Lancome Trophy days. Remember those? I mean, that was the fashion show to end all fashion shows.
Sans nom la bretèche, remember
it. The women used to teeter around in 5-inch spikes. And funnily enough, when it got a bit wet, it was difficult to get around the golf course. But it was.
I love that event because there was no cut, so I was always there on the Sunday. But I do love the Le Golf National. I think you have to play well. You have to hit it well off the tee there. Your iron play has to be top draw, and of course your course management has to be second to none, as we saw in the Ryder Cup.
New sponsor, the Amundi Open de France, in its position now, which may change again next season, but right now it's in a really good European run. We're kind of playing what used to be old school European Tour with all these venues that we've played, and again, Le Golf National now is firmly implanted in the minds of golf watchers around the world because of previous French Opens and of course the Ryder Cup that was there last time. 1906. People forget about that. 1906, the first French Open.
Wow.
It's been around a long, long time.
Did you play, Rob? Were you there?
I was there in 1906 putting out the flags. Yeah. I was too young to play then. Yeah.
No, but it is good, isn't it?
I played in many, many French Opens, yeah.
We've recently had London, Madrid, Rome.
I've just done that.
Yeah, I know. It's great. It's just hitting me now. That's wonderful, isn't it?
It's a nice little run. Yeah. It's a shame there's a couple of players like Wiesberger, for example. I mean, he's won on this golf course, but he's not playing, is he? No. So there's a good opportunity this week for someone, you know, it's getting close, isn't it, to keeping your card.
Alex Noren, defending champion.
Yeah.
How do we rate Alex's chances this week? He's dropped off it, hasn't he?
Yeah, he seems to have done. I think if he can get the golf ball in the fairway off the tee, I think he's got a heck of a chance of defending, but... you know, you really have to be playing from the fairways round the Golf National if you're going to contend.
It's interesting, isn't it, with Alex? Because even when he was on what seemed like an incredible run of wins and top finishes, he still spoke as if he wasn't fully confident with his game, which you don't expect to hear from a professional sportsman. And I think confidence wasn't great, or as great as it should be when you're winning. I think at the moment it's fairly low because he's not getting the results that he'd obviously want from his game.
Mm. A great golf course. It really is. And you've got to hit every club in the bag around there. And yet it's had some manky winners. Phil Golding's won around there.
Harsh.
Malcolm McKenzie's won around there.
With a one
Jean-Francois Ramessy has won, successfully defended around there. Mark Rowe has won around there.
I mean, there
are some shockers.
It'd be interesting to see how... I think that was the message received for all those guys. But the weather, I mean, I don't know what the forecast is, but, I mean, we're playing a little later in the year now than...
I think it's a great golf course, and I think
previously it's just gonna, I mean, it's pretty similar, obviously, time of year to when we had the Ryder Cup a year ago. Obviously.
Yeah, I can only imagine it'll be a little bit softer, so that will make it wider.
And the rough won't be as gnarly as it was in the Ryder Cup.
No, absolutely not. No,
that, I mean, we set the course up to make it a fairway finders golf course. America's have more power, so put it in our hands.
But we've played round the Golf National when it's been wet and the rough has been thick. We've also played round it when you were actually better off landing your ball on the hard pan in the rough and it bounced another 50 yards forward rather than landing it on the wet fairway.
I can remember playing it when, I mean, they talk about it being half parkland, half links, inland links.
Yeah.
When the fescues were really up high, you know, 2-3 feet high in the rough, the course had amazing definition and it was like playing a links course, like an open venue. If you went 10 yards offline, you're just hacking out.
Yeah, not anymore. I think that's...
Yeah, that seems to have gone.
A lot softer and greener than we've seen it in previous years, but, you know.
But it was a rubbish tip.
Literally.
I mean, that's what it was.
Yeah.
They've created that out of nothing. Yeah. Everything you see has been sculpted in the mind of the architect. I mean, it's a...
Is it the seventh fairway, that horrible...
Is it Van Hogg?
You drive onto a plateau and down to the right are just farm fields and
then the airstrip,
and it was all like that. It was dead flat. So great imagination to create something like that. And those closing holes with all the water apart from that.
I mean, of course, back in the day, the last hole used to be a par five.
Yes.
Which makes a big difference because you stand on that tee, the same tee, and you think, oh, this is a par five. You're thinking birdie hole. When they call it a par four, all of a sudden it's a panic.
Well, that's true, but we were playing with pea shooters off the tee. Now they're using cannons off the tee, aren't we?
That's true. So Malcolm McKenzie was a 2-iron, by the way.
It was a 2-iron.
2-iron off a tight bare lie to that left-hand pin. It was an amazing golf shot. It really was.
With Rod Wooler on the back.
Rod. Yeah. Oh,
Mucker.
Bless him. Yeah, Mucker.
Yeah.
He's been out there a long time, Mucker, as well. Now, anytime you win around that golf course, you've played some golf, no doubt about it. The field, Paul. Tell us who's playing.
Martin Kaymer. Defending champion Alex Noren, Brandon Stone, Tom Chai's playing, Chris Wood, who's playing a little better, Thomas Peters will be whizzing round in no time, no doubt, Guido
Migliozzi.
Yeah, he's playing. Marcus Chenault is there, Kurt Katayama, Victor Perez, and the list goes on and on. Some Frenchmen there, Alex Levy, Romain Wattel, Victor Dubuisson. Where's Victor been?
Well, he's not fishing anymore. He spent a large chunk of his career searching the biggest tuna in the Med.
Really?
Yeah, apparently he'd go to great lengths. He was subsidising his fishing by playing golf and then lost the interest in playing golf. Now he's got the interest back. I think the cash has run out. Needs to play golf again. An amazing talent, Victor Dubuisson.
Yeah, well, he had an inner ear infection. He couldn't even go on flight. So you're right, he did spend a long time on his boat, which I believe was called Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
obviously a big fan of a certain film. But no, he's had a pretty good year, really,
yeah.
Victor. It's good to see him coming back. And, you know, Alex Levy needs to start finding some form. So for the French players, obviously Victor Perez.
What about the chances, Richard, of a French win? That would be nice.
Well, one of my picks is going to be a Frenchman. So
no chance then.
So no chance, obviously.
Well, also coming back into a bit of form, Ross Fisher, who's had a poor year by his standards. Matthias Schwab, who's playing fantastically week in, week out, so it seems. And then we've also got some of the oldies in there. Thomas Bjorn, Robert Carlson and Jose Maria Olazabal are all playing.
I like it. So because it's precarious now, the presenter, co-presenter, guest totals as we head in towards the final stretch on the European Tour, Making your picks now are very important. And of course, I go last, you go first, Richard.
Okay.
So for success. So you know the rules. Anyone you want to win, plus your second pick has to be from outside last year's top 50 in the Race to Dubai.
Okay. So for the guy that was inside the top 50, I think, yeah, he was inside the top 50 on the Race to Dubai last year. Because Wiesberger, you know, here's a man came back from a wrist injury and into winning ways. Why not a similar kind of story with Jos Luiten, who's kind of bubbling under a little bit, but
undercooked at the minute, do you think?
Yeah, I think he's due another win. He's a, you know, a winner on the European Tour, so I fancy him to do well. I think to be honest, I haven't looked at what his record is previously around Golf Nacional, but I think he should perform well on a golf course like that. And the other guy we'll go for is my Frenchman, who's a real talent. You know, we talked earlier about some of the young talents who, you know, been contesting the Rookie of the Year race. This guy is not a rookie, but Romain Langasque, who I think in the last 12 months' game has come on great. I think he's in the top 25 of the Race to Dubai.
They've got a strong group of players now, haven't they?
As it stands at the moment. So, yeah, I think it's a tough golf course as well. So I think that he's a great ball striker, and I think someone like Langasque will be very much contending amongst the local players.
I like it. Paul? Mm.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Erik van Rooyen. He would be my first one.
He's had the big breakthrough season, hasn't he?
Yes, he had. And he's also, I don't know whether you know this, but he's sought out help from the tour referees and officials about the pace of play, because he was known as one of the snails on tour. And since seeking some advice on how his pre-shot routines, etc., could get a little bit quicker, he's actually started to perform. So every credit for him for going to seek help on that.
There's definitely a career for somebody that wants to be involved in golf. You know, these players have teams that seem to be getting bigger and bigger. There is a career for somebody to have a routine coach. So you work on the range with players and their routine.
Well, they've got those anyway, or with the mind.
What are they called?
They're called, it's either a psychiatrist
or a psychologist.
No,
that's not the same thing.
No, it isn't. Because then you've got your golf coach who is particularly into...
It's not him either. You've not mentioned the routine coach. Well, it's not the same thing. The mind coach is you don't hit it till you're ready, and the golf coach is this is how you swing it. Right. I'm talking about the guy that works with you and tells you how to have a routine, the thing you stick to time in, time out, whether you're putting or hitting shots. Yeah. So it takes 40 seconds or it takes 35 seconds. You build and practice a routine on the range and you take that on the golf course.
I think
who is that guy? If you want to make yourself some money, that's what you do.
Yeah, I think that's going to come with the new slow play things. They're all going to get penalised, I'm sure, going forward. Anyway, that was number one. And my other is Matthias Schwab, who is just there. Week in, week out, everything about his game is primed and ready. He does everything well. He's just waiting for that week where he holds those mid-range putts.
Very good. I'm going to go for a Frenchman. I'm going to go for Mike Lorenzo Vera to play well at Le Golf National.
I was just looking at his record there, Rob. You know how he's finished there the last few years?
The 78th, 95th, 104th.
No, he's had a 6th and a 3rd and 16th last
year. You think I just plucked that out of nowhere?
Yeah, so he's in the last four attempts there, he's finished in the top 16.
He was 51st last year, Mike Lorenzo Vera, so he just qualifies for an outsider.
Yeah.
And my
on the Race to Dubai, you mean?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And my pick is going to be Ross Fisher.
Oh.
So I've got Ross Fisher and Mike Lorenzo Vera.
Yeah.
So none of us are going for Norrin, whose last 3 years have been 8th, 10th, 1st.
You're
not.
Correct, Richard.
Yeah. Well done,
you
Richard.
You are correct, yeah. Yes. You're through to the next round.
Thank you. No just clarifying.
No. It's a very good point. And you're right, none of us have gone for him.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching golf from Le Golf National. Well, we're going to do a bit of charity now on the show, a bit of a departure for us on the Race to Dubai show. And we have on the line Luke Willett, who's a PGA pro, and he's trying to complete a unique and grueling 10-day golfing challenge. Now, just take this on board. He's going to cycle more than 800 miles to all 14 Open Championship venues, carrying his clubs on his back and playing a full 18 holes on each golf course. Hello, Luke. Are you stark raving mad?
Maybe a little, but you know, you got to play this game. It plays with your mind.
How did you come up with this was a good thing to do in terms of raising money for charity? How did you come up with this?
How did I come up with it? I am a PGA pro, as you said, and I'm always exploring. I'm always looking for creative new ways of doing things. And being a coach, I'm ever more keen to try and find new ways of helping my students and whatnot. And I've often looked at other sports and challenges and this, that, and the other to motivate people to go further. And I guess over the last 2 years, I've sort of ticked off a few grueling challenges. And I guess the kind of creative and the creativity and the adventurous side of me is growing. Human nature, you know, you always want to go for bigger and better challenges.
What weight will you be when you start, and what weight will you be when you finish?
I've been a steady 11 stone. I'm pretty slender. I'm 6'2" as well. So I don't think I've ever really moved off that. But I tell you what, it's going to be funny to have a check at the end of it, because I'm doing my best to eat a lot. And I think during the challenge, I'm going to eat so many bananas and nuts and, massive bowls of porridge and this, that, and the other. It's going to be an interesting one.
Luke, I see that you're playing at Royal Birkdale and Royal Liverpool on the 24th of October, is it? So you're going to play 18 at Birkdale in the morning and then cycle to Hoylake and play there. Wow.
Yeah, there's a few days like that. I mean, day one's Carnoustie, nice, easy start, clearly. But fortunately, my legs will be fresh that day. So, Carnoustie, St Andrews, day one. Day two, we've got Muirfield, Musselburgh, and then in that evening, I'm going to cycle all the way across to Glasgow. And then the next day, another 36-holer. So, there's a few 36-hole days. It's going to be pretty nuts.
Yeah, what about choosing this time of year? I mean, cycling, it can get tough in this weather. Playing Lynx Golf Course as well, in the middle of towards the end of October. Did you not fancy a little bit of summer golf?
I'm not against summer golf. I love summer golf. But, there's a couple of things. I remember I played Royal County Down a few years back, and it was kind of like this, and it was around this time of year, and I absolutely loved it. It was pouring down with rain, it was windy, and I just felt it was so raw, and it was so perfect for the type of golf course. And, hey, that's what these golf courses are. They're links, they turn all your senses on you. I mean, I love, you're going to laugh at this, but I love the cold water. So, occasionally I might go and swim a lake and it's freezing cold, but I just feel alive, and there's nothing better than sort of turning all those senses on.
There's no way that you're cycling with a full set of clubs on your back.
No, not a full set of clubs. There's going to be four clubs. So I play a bit of speed golf. So I'm quite used to being quite versatile with the clubs. And, it's my 3-wood is the club. And then I have a 6-iron and a wedge. And then my putter. So, hey, it's going to be fun. I mean, that's part of the adventure as well, is playing with that reduced set of clubs and creating different sort of shots, as you go. It's going to be fun.
And how long would a speed round take you normally, Luke?
Well, it's definitely less than 4 hours. I had a stab at the speed golf world record earlier in the year. That was a bit nuts at Woking Golf Club, which is a fine golf course. And I flew around. I didn't quite get the record, but I was really happy. I got around in 40 minutes and shot 80. So, that gives you a bit of a feel of it.
Tell us about the charity that you're raising money for.
The Golf Foundation. It's hard to pick a better charity, I think, within golf. Certainly from my point of view as a PGA coach, I bring a lot of kids into the sport and have done through the years that I've taught this game. And the Golf Foundation, their core responsibility or their core focus is to do just that, is to bring kids into the sport and keep them in the sport. So really, they've got a big job on their hands. They're going to hopefully keep, kids coming into the sport and keep our game growing.
That's a great charity, Luke. Tell us how people can, listening to this podcast, join in and contribute.
There's a few different ways. I mean, from my point of view, the charity side of it, if you go to Just Giving, type in the Great British Open Challenge, you'll find all the details there. It's a nice, easy way to go about it. And then, from my point of view, this is a big challenge. By day one, for example, I have a nice line. I get up at 6:30, play Carnoustie, then cycle 30 miles to St Andrews, then play St Andrews, then get on the bike again and cycle about another 55 miles to the other side of Edinburgh. I will finish that night probably about 11 p.m. midnight. So most days are going to be like that. So one thing that would be a huge support on top of helping the Golf Foundation would be the odd little word of support. I will be posting daily. So, if people send me the odd little messages or, I'm sure there might even be some some random moments where I might even see someone running next door to me or cycling next door to me. But yeah, any little bit of support, any little message will help greatly.
Great stuff, Luke. Listen, good luck with your endeavour. I hope you raise a load of cash for the charity and stay safe on the roads. And by all means, enjoy the golf that you're going to play.
Yeah, good luck, Luke.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah, good luck, Luke.
Cheers, guys.
It's going to be busy for him, isn't it? Oof. It's going to be really busy. I mean, I'm exhausted listening to the itinerary.
Yeah, well, I think...
Some great courses, though, isn't there?
Yeah, I could probably just about manage to play the golf. The thought of cycling just 30 miles just leaves me...
It's just in the... I mean, listen, I know he said he'll feel alive, but, the weather. I mean,
cycling across Scotland in sort of
late October,
in autumn time.
Well, let's just hope that all the courses that he's going to play haven't got the championship teapots out, and that the winter course,
the Blazers turn up, and he says, "All right, hello, goodbye, I must be going." Yeah. He's not going to stay there and do niceties for 2 hours, is he?
No, but the winter tees are out, and the courses are playing around about 6,000 yards, so he can crack on.
Sorry, Luke, there's four balls stacked up in front of you. It's not what you want to hear, is it?
No.
Hang on, I don't think you understand. I'm cycling 50 miles at the end of this round. No, best of luck to him, and it's certainly a very unusual endeavour. Well, that is about it for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll have a full review of the Amundi Open de France. Plus, we'll look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the biggie, the Portugal Masters. But for now, from Richard Kaufman, who's gone for...
Loughton and Longas.
The L's kept you in it there, didn't they?
Yeah, they're going to have another of a week.
Oi! Paul, you've gone for?
Van Rooyen and Schwab.
That's Paul Eales, myself, Robert Lee. I've gone for Ross Fisher and Michel Lorenzo Vera. We talked about good names for Formula One drivers. That would be a goodie.
MLV.
Yeah. From all of us here on the Race to Dubai, till next time, it's goodbye.